Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
Issaquah was drilled. Oh, my goodness. Harrison again laying the wood, and he is slow to get up.
The NFL is taking a new hard line on what it calls flagrant and egregious hits. Pittsburgh Steelers linebacker James Harrison picked up a $75,000 fine last week for knocking a Cleveland Browns wide receiver out of the game. And two more big fines were handed out as well. This hour on Point, we're looking at the NFL's new take on egregious hits. You can join the conversation. Is this necessary, overdue, too much? Will it change football? Will it be football? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We will hear in this hour from three former NFL players and a researcher looking at football and brain injury. Joining me right now from Milwaukee is Kevin Blackistone, columnist for AOL Fanhouse, frequent panelist on ESPN's Around the Horn. Kevin Blackistone, great to have you back. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Tom.
So they came out with a whole lot of fines last week, three very, very prominent and visible fines. This weekend, nothing, I think, quite like that. No fines so far that I know of. But where's the NFL driving here, Kevin? Can they be the NFL and have these new rules? Does it all fit together?
Absolutely. I mean, I think last weekend was a very bad weekend for pro football because of the three devastating hits that you alluded to in your opening. No one likes to see bodies quivering on the ground. And it's been said time and time again over the past few years that guys are getting bigger and faster and stronger. And with the velocity that their body weight carries when they're running around on the field and the violence with which they crash into each other now, it is becoming a very, very dangerous situation. And remember, this last weekend also came right on the heels of a tragedy up in Rutgers where a football player was paralyzed on a special teams play, sticking his head into a block trying to make a play. So all of this was playing very much on the minds of, I think, the NFL, the union, players around the league. And at the end of the day, the NFL just doesn't want to see another tragedy like Daryl Stingley or even worse.
Kevin, a lot of our listeners will have seen all these. They get a lot of play. If you watch football, you saw these three fined hits played again and again last week. But describe them for us, just for those who haven't. Not everybody's going to be a football fan, but they may well care about those players. Let's just take them. First, that James Harrison hit, the biggest fine. What happened there?
Right. Well, James Harrison is a big, burly, strong, fast linebacker, and he's one of the hardest-hitting players in the league and has been for a while. And they were playing the Cleveland Browns, and on two very similar plays, smaller receivers were running across the middle trying to make a catch, and James Harrison twice caught them very high above the shoulders and left them groggy on the ground. And after one of the hits, I believe it was the second hit on Mohamed Massaquoi, I believe is the way he pronounces his name, James Harrison, as often he's done in the past, somewhat genuflected and paraded around celebrating his hit while this guy was trying to get his wits about him. And then after the game, James Harrison was asked about the damage he'd done, and he said that that he didn't mind hurting people on the field. And I think that comment, as much as what he had done on the field, cost him the biggest fine.
Here's a little bit from a Bears cornerback, Charles Tillman, talking to reporters about the new NFL rule against flagrant, egregious hits, saying, you know, hey, that's kind of what we go out there for.
What our coaches and every coach in this league tells his player is you want to separate the man from the ball. You want to hit him hard. We get jacked up for that. Y'all get jacked up for that. You know, they replay it on the Jumbotron at every game.
At every game, that's we've seen in highlight reels for years. What about Brandon Merriweather and the Dunter Robinson hits? What about those, Kevin?
You know, the Brandon Merriweather hit and the Dunter Robinson hit, those were ugly as well. But the one that was laid on DeSean Jackson, and I believe that was Brandon Merriweather that put the shot on him. It was actually a legal shot. It just so happened that as he made the hit, he also connected with DeSean Jackson's head, which is really the biggest no-no in pro football. That's what they have to eliminate. There's nothing you can do about the hard collisions, but if guys are targeting heads or the head gets hit, that's where you really, really get into trouble. That's what causes concussions. We know now that the league has a big problem with concussions going back a couple of decades now. We know about the damage that it does to the brain. We know about people trying to live with the ramifications of these kinds of injuries, and that's really what the NFL has got to guard against.
Of course, we're hearing all about the research on brain injury that comes here, and that's very much on people's minds, but the game is also on people's minds, and the market, and the whole big business. Here's Mark Schlereth, an NFL analyst for ESPN, former NFL player. He talked about the James Harrison's $75,000 fine on ESPN SportsCenter last Wednesday.
Taking $75,000 away from James Harrison for playing football is criminal. It's criminal to me. If you want to suspend him for a game, suspend him for a game. But don't take away the man's pay for doing what he's been taught to do since he was a little boy. Right? Since he started playing this game. The NFL, it should be. Too bad the acronym NHL has been taken. Because we could name it the National Hypocrite League. Because we're selling videos and we glorify contact. The reason the NFL is popular, you take all the contact away, guess what you are? You're soccer.
Take all the contact away. I don't think that's what's being proposed, but you can
I think, right. I think Mark went a little bit overboard there in his emotion, but he does make a good point. I mean, right now it's as if the players are being scapegoated in all of this. But in fact, you have a generation of players now who have been brought up on exactly what the NFL has marketed, which are the big hits that lay guys out. Those of us in the media have tacitly supported it by promoting it on the air. ESPN, from whom I garner a paycheck, used to have a segment on their ESPN Sunday game show called Jacked Up, which were the highlights of the biggest hits that laid guys out over the course of the week. The popular Madden video game, which is supported by the NFL, includes a device called the Hit Stick, where kids can push it to make a tackle they're about to make even more violent. So it's a bit disingenuous on the part of the league to just point the finger at the players. They have to point the finger at themselves. And the main thing is they have to change the culture of football a little bit. And it's not the this won't be the first time that this challenge has been before the league. If you go back 100 years, 1909, 1910, when college football was all the rage before the birth of the NFL, there was one year where 11 players got killed.
Oh my
11.
God.
That was the equivalent of one player per week. Can you imagine the outcry that would come if that were going on now? At the end of the day, the NFL just doesn't want to have one death on the field.
We're going to hear from Joe Nash and Michael Oriard in this hour, former NFL players themselves. With us right now from New York City is Tim Hasselbeck, a football analyst for ESPN, former NFL quarterback for the New York Giants, Washington Redskins, Eagles, Buffalo Bills, son of Patriots tight end Don Hasselbeck and brother of Matt Hasselbeck, current starting quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks. Tim Hasselbeck, thanks very much for being here.
It's good to be on with you.
So is it still the game if you take some of these jacked-up hits out of it?
I think it's certainly still the game if you take away, some of the, or not just some of the, but all of the, the flagrant, headshots on defenseless players. I don't know that anybody really would argue against that point. I think part of the problem is that, as Kevin stated, And it was said by Ray Anderson, you know, I don't know his exact title. I think he believes he's the executive vice president of something to do with player safety.
NFL,
he's the one issuing the statements on player safety. But basically, you know, he said it was a bad weekend for football last weekend, and Kevin, you know, reiterated that. And, you know, I would just disagree with that. You know, if you look at the three major fines from last weekend, and then again, I think Kevin got some of these mixed up a little bit. James Harrison was fined not for two hits, but he was fined for one hit. He was fined for the hit on Muhammad Massaquah.
Right.
The hit on Josh Cribb that gave him a concussion, he was not fined for that. So he was fined for one hit, and he was fined $75,000 with no prior warning. And quite honestly,
is that right or wrong? Or was
that, that's wrong to me. That's without a doubt wrong to fine a guy $75,000 on a hit where, you know, you're aiming at a guy to hit him, and he then changes where he is. He lowers his level to brace for the impact. Well, because you hit him 5 inches higher, which maybe was an accident. Maybe you wanted to hit him right in the sternum. But because Muhammad Massaquah braced himself for the hit, he ends up making contact in the head. You know, and quite honestly, if he catches the ball cleanly, then he's able to take three steps before Harrison hits him. You know, so, again, we're fining James Harrison $75,000 on a hit that, to me, I really don't understand it.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about extreme hits, flagrant hits, helmet hits, and the NFL, professional football. Kevin Blackstone is with us, columnist for AOL Fanhouse, frequent panelist on ESPN's Around the Horn. Tim Hasselbeck is with us as well, from New York City, football analyst for ESPN, former NFL quarterback, New York Giants, Washington Redskins, and right on around. With me in the studio right now, Joe Nash, played 15 seasons as a nose tackle and defensive tackle with the Seattle Seahawks. Joe Nash, it's great to have you right here.
Thank you, Tom.
And with us from Corvallis, Oregon, is Michael Oriard. He's now professor of English and associate dean at Oregon State University, former offensive captain and second-team All-American at the University of Notre Dame, played four seasons with the Kansas City Chiefs. Michael Oriard, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you again.
Thank you. It's great to be with you, Tom.
Joe Nash, you're sitting here listening as Kevin and Tim look in on what's going on. I'm sure you've seen a lot of these games. You've seen a lot of hits over the years. Can you draw a line? If 5 inches make the difference between, you know, violent but acceptable and violent but egregious, can it be done?
It has to be done. I mean, I think the fact that we've got so many guys getting concussions and what these concussions are leading to later in life, we have to. You know, I think the big thing is, though, is the coaches have to get back to teaching these guys how to tackle. I mean, granted, you know, there are going to be violent collisions. Players are still going to be trying to separate the ball from the wide receiver or the running back or whatever. But you look at most of these hits, these guys are not trying to tackle. They're just trying to knock the guy down with his head.
But isn't that the way it's done these days? I see an awful lot of that.
I think you need to get back to the way it's supposed to be, back to teach these guys how to actually tackle.
Tim, how do you do that? I mean, are football players capable of sort of rewinding the tape if they've been taught to use their heads to separate the running back from the ball for 15 years? Can you wind it back?
Well, I think part of what's happening here is I've heard a lot of players, and this isn't a disrespect to Joe Nash or to anybody else, an older player who says this, but, you know, to get back to the fundamentals of tackling and how it's done. But the reality is the game changes, and the way things happen now, people are always going for the football. One of the reasons you see poor tackling is because people are always punching at the football, just like Lawrence Taylor used to do when he would hit a quarterback. It's how the game has changed. And so, you know, when you hear people say, well, guys don't know how to tackle now. They just are delivering these big hits, hoping to separate the man from the football. But that's gone on. That went on in the 70s. That went on before that. That's not something new to this era. And so to say that these guys need to all of a sudden totally change the way they tackle, to me, is off base. I think you need to eliminate the hits that we saw Brandon Merriweather put on Todd Heap, because it was an egregious head-to-head shot that was completely unnecessary. But to say that you're going to fine Merriweather $50,000 and then fine Dante Robinson $50,000 for the hit that he put on DeSean Jackson is basically, there's no consistency from the NFL standpoint, And you're not going to be able to legislate it that way. And ultimately what you're doing is you're just taking money out of the player's pocket. That's what's happening. And they can say, well, it's in the name of protecting the players, but you're still going to have concussions when a quarterback, you know, falls backwards and hits his head on the ground. You're still going to have that stuff. That's part of the game.
Michael Oriard, can it be done? Can a line be drawn through this fast and violent game that's reasonable, that's enforceable, that leaves the game, you know, a game that fills stadiums?
Well, I definitely think that the game can be made safer. Whether it can be made safe enough, I'm not so sure. But if it can't be, then the NFL and football in general are in really deep trouble. You know, and the NFL can pass these rules and it can manage things as well as it can. But the real problem's going to happen at the youth league level where, you know, parents don't let their kids play tackle football because it just doesn't make sense anymore. And if we get to that point, then it'll take some time, but the whole game will sort of shrivel up. So the NFL absolutely has to do whatever it can. I mean, the basic principle to take the head out of football has to be its guiding principle for the next several months and even years, and then we're just going to all have to see what happens, what transpires. Now, I watched the game last night. It looked like football to me, you know, without any head hits. I don't see that as a problem. Whether in fact you can make the game safe enough for the players by taking the head out of the game, you know, and because you can't eliminate the incidental hits to the head, you know, the 1,000 hits of lineman gets over the course of a season or whatever. So I mean, I think right now we're at a real uncertain point, but the NFL absolutely has to do whatever it can to make the game safer, and that starts with taking the head out of the game to the extent that it can.
Maybe the effect is there already with these three big prominent fines. I mean, here's a little piece of this is on NBC yesterday. An analyst, Peter King, he quoted the NFL's officiating chief, Carl Johnson, on how he thinks NFL players have reacted to the new rules on violent hits.
And I asked him, I said, what did you see today when you were watching the games in the NFL Command Center? And he said, and I quote, I've seen a change in players' behavior in 1 week.
Kevin Blackistone, did you see it? Three fines and a different game, or at least a certain edge taken off of it?
Well, I certainly didn't see the highlights this weekend that we saw from last weekend. I think the message did get through. I mean, that's why I think last weekend was such a bad weekend for football. I talked to, on Monday after last week, I talked to a union official, and that was the very first thing he said to me. Just because of the media culture, the 24/7 media culture that we have now, and particularly in sports, and everybody saw those replays, and that transcended the game, and that's why we are talking about it here today or here on NPR, because of how that resonated with so many people. And you know, I was looking around at some of the highlights from Sunday, looking to see if we saw those kind of hits. Didn't really see it, and I think that football players, almost more so than athletes in any other team sport, are the smartest of guys. Maybe because they spend more time in school, maybe because of the studying that the game requires, but the message gets through to these guys. And you can just look at the last few years. They outlawed horse tackles. Guys don't do it anymore, and if they do, the few that do it.
What's a horse tackle,
get flagged,
Kevin?
That's when you grab someone in the back of their neck by their shoulder pads jersey, mm-hmm. and that can cause injury. For years, guys used to chop, block, and hit below the knee. You can't do that anymore. They just put in a rule about going after a quarterback's knees in the pocket. They don't do that anymore. These guys are very, very smart and can be very, very respectful of each other and their careers. And I think that they can do without the headshots, and I think it will go away.
Don't want to leave those smarts on the field with concussions and headshots. We've only got Tim for another minute, but Joe Nash, what about this idea that, you know, as long as coaches are going to say separate the man from the ball, you're going to have heads involved and you're going to have pretty tough shots out there.
But you're still going to have the head involved. I think what we're talking about is the head-to-head collision where somebody is actually trying to take a shot at the other guy's head. That's what we're trying to get rid of. I think that what's going to happen is if you're going to suspend these guys, the coaches are going to turn around and make sure that they're not making those hits.
But you played nose tackle. How do you avoid head-to-head?
The linemen, you're going to have head-to-head hits on every single play. We're talking about a shorter distance. The helmets have come a long way, so hopefully, they're a lot safer now. I think the other thing is that most concussions that guys that play on the line probably get will end up being from somebody hitting somebody's knee or something like that rather than a head-to-head collision.
Tim, I know we got to let you go. Last thought. Will these three, very high-profile penalties just be the beginning of a rain of penalties, or do you think a little adjustment in the, attitudes out there can sort of reel it back in and get away from some of these real jacked-up hits?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt you're going to see, more of these stiff fines in terms of the penalties. Brandon Merriweather, who was fined $50,000 for a hit, put a hit on Patrick Creighton this past weekend that 2 inches higher, he's going to get fined again and possibly suspended. I mean, there's going to be times where you miss and you hit. And, I would just say this. Everyone, wants to, eliminate all these hits. And, I will say, the head-to-head shot that Brandon Merriweather put on Todd Heap, there's no doubt that needs to be eliminated from the game. But I played in a game for the New York Giants where Mathias Kiwanuka, because he had a roughing the passer call the week before, had Vince Young wrapped up and decided to let him go because he did not want to get another penalty and did not want to get fined for roughing the passer. He let him go. We end up losing the football game. And I think one of the things that people have to realize is you're trying to win a football game. That's how these guys make their living. And so, it's your job to separate the man from the ball. It's your job to help your team win. And if you feel like you're in a position where you can't play aggressively and the coaches don't even know how to coach you, because I know that's the case right now with a lot of defensive coordinators is telling their players what to do, it's a no-win situation for the players. I think everyone's for player safety, but I don't know that it's being legislated the right way with these new moves.
Tim Hasselbeck, at ESPN analyst there, former NFL quarterback for the New York Giants and much more. Tim, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Let's get our listeners right in here. Gabe in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Gabe, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. How's it going?
Okay. What do you see?
Good. So, big fan of the show, big fan of the NFL. I feel like everyone's acting like the NFL is putting down some new rules here. But these are rules that have been in place for a while.
I don't remember seeing three big fines like that in one weekend.
Well, that's the response. But they're just fining things which have been illegal, for a long time. And your guest just mentioned the hit that Merriweather did yesterday, where it's been a couple inches out of the way, and he's going to get fined. But right after that hit, he points to the crowd and says, an away game, he's in San Diego, and they all cheer. They're the ones who you've got this like bloodlust that want to see this stuff happen. But the game works without it. As we saw yesterday.
Works without it. But Michael out in Corvallis, Michael Oriard, we heard Tim say, you're trying to win a game. The implication: you got to do what it takes to win. Is that what the crowd wants? Is that what the coaches want? Do they know how to coach without the sort of whole range of hits, egregious included?
Well, there's no question that the power of football, its appeal to us, is not the violence alone, but the combination of violence and colored artistry or whatever. And, people really don't want just pure mayhem, but on the other hand, they don't want, just simple gracefulness out on the field. It's the tension between the two. And, I'm guessing that it would be silly to say that the crowd doesn't get into it and want to see those big hits and so on. But whether or not they would be satisfied with hits that are a little less lethal, I would think so. And the challenge is to get to the point where the game, maintains that tension without losing, that appeal to crowd. But, if football is going to have the appeal that, say, Ultimate Fighting does, it doesn't have a very, very long future ahead of it. It's going to have to appeal to a wide range of fans and so on, some of whom really want the big hits that jack up the player that is hit. But, others, and most, I would think, would be perfectly satisfied with a game that is, yes, violent, but not overly violent.
Kevin Blackistone, what about it? Do coaches know how to coach in this direction? And why has this emerged, Kevin? I mean, it's been violent. You point to a century ago, right? 11 dead in one season. But something's happened in the last decade here. There are more of these really spectacular, helmet-whacking hits, at least it seems to me.
Right, and it's been going on for a long time. Tim's absolutely right about that. I mean, you go back and look at the old black and white films from the 50s and the early 60s, and you see guys getting laid out by clothesline tackles and that kind of thing, which are now outlawed as well. So the game can certainly adjust and continue to appeal to a lot of people. Coaches can coach any way they want to. They've become more sophisticated over the years as well. You know, we talked a few years ago about guys falling out in practice, not having enough fluids in their body, and now there are a lot more coaches who are cognizant of the need for water breaks, curtailing the length of practices, and not practicing in extreme heat. So coaches can always make the adjustment, and that's the thing they're going to have to do here. They're going to have to make the adjustment, because I don't think this is so much about punitive measures against players today. This is a deterrent to young players, and I think folks alluded to that earlier in the program. Young kids coming along, learning how to play the game. We've got to get this out of their system before they get to the next level, and that's the best way to keep the game fair, clean, and safe for everybody.
Let's go to Alma. Alma, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have two comments, and then I'll take the comment response off the air.
Mm-hmm.
But my first one is that it seems like the onus is being put completely on the defense, and while certainly there are cases, we all remember around here in New England the Darryl Stingley case when it really is the defense. But I think in some cases the offense, you know, the guy at the last instant lowers his head,
mm-hmm.
and the defender has already made his move. He really doesn't have any choice but to hit him.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the second thing I believe is that the NFL is really sending mixed messages because they're talking so much about player safety, but they also want to extend the season to games. And we all know that in the preseason players don't play anywhere near the full game. So that would put them at greater risk for a longer point in the season, and I think that's kind of the mixed message that they can't have it both ways.
Two more games and more exposure right there. What about offense and defense, Joe Nash? I mean, Alma's obviously right. Put your head down, and you may make the helmet-to-helmet collision.
Well, I agree, and I think that's going to have to be a judgment call by the referee on the field as well as by the whoever is going to administrate the fines after the fact.
But how does that work? I mean, if we're talking offense, maybe the runner, you know, his job is to get it down the field. If he's putting his head down to try and do that, can you see somebody getting fined for that?
I can't see that happening. Again, I think that's going to be the same kind of thing as a defensive lineman running into an offensive lineman. It's part of the game. It's not something that deliberately is trying to hurt somebody. And I think that's what they're trying to legislate right now, is to try to knock out those hits where people are headhunting.
Michael Oriar, do you agree with Kevin Blackstone? You can kind of infect the system with a new perspective on this, and young players won't come up with the same predilection to put the helmet first?
Well, that absolutely has to be your hope. The three big fines from last weekend, and whether or not they're fair to the players, raises an interesting question. I mean, I would say that, guys who were penalized for hits that were not, in fact, illegal, that got no penalty, were personally really unjustly treated. But they can appeal the fine and win it. But I think the NFL had to send a really clear message. And the message was a whole lot clearer with those three big fines rather than just one for the egregious hit on Tom Heap. They've got to change the culture we're hearing over and over again. Well, that's one of the kind of the decisive initial steps to changing the culture. But then, you got to change it, at the lower levels. But the NFL sets the tone for the rest of football. So it's got to at least make statements. And, however impossible it is to eliminate all the head hits, it's got to get rid of the really egregious ones. And then the younger players can be coached differently. And, this is not an easy thing to do. It's got to be done, though.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about extreme hits, flagrant hits, helmet hits, and the NFL, the National Football League. There have been some big fines recently and a lot of talk about changing the game, at least at its most dangerous edges on the field. Joe Nash is with us, played 15 seasons as a nose tackle and defensive tackle with the Seattle Seahawks. Michael Oriard is here, played 4 seasons with the Kansas City Chiefs. Kevin Blackstone is with us from Milwaukee, columnist for AOL Funhouse frequent panelist on ESPN's Around the Horn. There's been a lot of talk and a lot of hits. In a recent game, Atlanta Falcons cornerback Dante Robinson leveled Philadelphia Eagles wide receiver DeSean Jackson. But both players got a concussion after a really big hit. Jackson's was characterized as severe.
I don't know how you take this out of the game of football. I don't know if there's anything you can do. They've implemented the rule. It's hard for the player. Thank goodness it looks like it's on the shoulder more
personal
than it was
foul,
helmet to helmet.
23, defense. It's a defenseless receiver. 15-yard penalty, first down.
But we've got to find a way. We've got to find a way in this game to help eliminate that play right there, and I don't know how you do it.
That's the effort. It's not easy. Dante Robinson fined $50,000 for that hit. Here's Colts defensive end Dwight Feeney complaining that the new NFL rules put players in a tough position in an interview with an ESPN analyst last week.
And you got great backs out there, great receivers that will break tackles. All of a sudden, you're going to start seeing guys miss a lot of tackles because they're worried about being suspended for games.
And maybe lose their job.
And exactly. So now they're losing their job because they didn't want to make the tackle.
It's all out there as once. We've got a lot of response online. Ashley says on Facebook, absolutely time. Those types of hits made me cringe and cover my eyes. But here's Paul saying, I wonder if part of the problem is that the helmets and padding are too good, making the players feel invincible. And here's another John wondering about changing players themselves. He says, about these NFL hits years ago, the average lineman weighed only 250 pounds, weren't as fast as running backs. Today, quarterbacks are 250, getting tackled by 300-pound linemen. The sport cannot be safe for its players unless some rules change. Joe, what about the size of the players out there now and maybe the speed at that size? Does that change the physics here?
Oh, absolutely does. I mean, you've got linebackers now that are averaging 350, 360, whereas when I was playing at the beginning of my career, they're 240. At the end of my career, they're around 245, 250. Linemen are now 300. You know, you can't play line now unless you're 300 pounds. So you've got that speed, that size moving at great speeds. It's going to cause havoc.
And Kevin, this complaint that it won't be the same game. I mean, can you imagine NFL football just looking different, a lot more wrapping up runners with the ball instead of the boom?
You know, you're still going to have the boom. You need more wrapping up. You're still going to have the boom, but you just can't have the boom above the shoulders. You asked where can the line be drawn. That's where it has to be drawn, because hitting the head at this size and speed that guys are now, it's just far too dangerous. And you mentioned the padding the guys wear. You know, the helmet was originally added as a protective device, and now it's become part of the weaponry. Yeah. And so that's another reason that the head just has to be removed from the game.
We'll hear in just a moment from one of the group at Boston University that's really looking into the impact of these head hits. Let's get a call first. Bowling Green, Kentucky. Matt, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
First of all, I'd like to say that, we talk about the new rule and the hits above the shoulders. Yes, it's definitely something that needed to be done. Does there need to be something more done as far as in youth leagues? Yes, I think there is, too, as far as talking about shooting your arms, wrapping up, the basic techniques of tackling somebody. You can still have your boom. You can still have your hit. You can have these big impacts. But if we're not teaching these kids to wrap up, shoot your arms, wrap up, make the tackle, you know, where are we going from there? They're seeing it on TV. It's being glorified. It's great. They see this. I was at my little brother's football game. None of them. They were all running up just trying to make the hit, trying to jump, no wrapping, nothing. And I think that's where it comes from as far as our coaches, our youth coaches being held accountable. And then as far as the hits, we're going to see a lot more knee injuries. We're going to see a lot more individuals that are being taken out as far as hits below the waist, making those big hits. Yeah, they're going to be not wrapping up. They're going to be making those exploding hits below the waist.
Boy, so hit the head or take out the knee. I mean, these are rough choices. Matt, I appreciate your call. Joe Nash, I mean, first of all, maybe we should define wrap up. Not everybody plays football or even cares, but it's sort of, you know,
reaching your arms out, grabbing around the player, either grabbing shirt, grabbing whatever you can, pulling him down to the ground, actually running through him to put him on the ground. But if you look at these devastating hits, these guys physically just they cannot be wrapping up the way that they are taking their head and launching themselves into the head of
their
opponent.
They're not even trying to.
They absolutely are not trying to.
So they're just trying essentially to make themselves a projectile that knocks down.
Exactly.
Rather than wrapping around with their arms and dragging or pulling.
And you'll see a lot of times if they miss the mark a little bit, which Tim was talking about, they miss the mark, the guy gets away, it's because they're not wrapping up and not actually trying to tackle the guy. They're trying to knock the person down.
They get it with the impact or not at all in that case. Joe Nash, Michael Oriard, Kevin Blackstone, stand by for just a second. Ann McKee joins us right now from Bedford, Massachusetts, Associate Professor of Neurology and Pathology at the Boston University School of Medicine. She's Director of BU's Neuropathology Core, and she's testified before Congress on the NFL and brain injuries. Ann, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Well, thanks for having me.
Remind us of the risks that you and your colleagues have been putting before the country and the sport here.
Well, I should say just to start out that I'm a major football fan, and what I've been doing is looking at the brains of players that have died, and what we've found in nearly every brain is evidence of this neurodegenerative disease. Now, some of the individuals have it a very early or mild stage, but other individuals have a very severe stage, and this disease is called chronic traumatic encephalopathy. It's a disease that has only been found after repetitive head trauma, and we're seeing it in the vast majority of football players.
What's the conclusion that you're drawing from that evidence that you're finding in these the brains of players who've died?
The conclusion is that the repetitive trauma that most players experience during the play of football is leading to this disorder, and that we need to reduce the amount of trauma that these players experience, not only through the big hits that you've been talking about earlier, mm-hmm. but you need to, you know, decrease the subconcussive hits that the linemen and linebackers experience with every play of the game.
Well, how are you going to do that? That sounds like, you know, shut down the stadium. Subconcussive hits in the line, I mean, that is surely the essence of football. I'm not necessarily defending it, though, like a lot of people, I enjoy watching it, but how do you get away from that?
I don't know how you get away from that, but I think if players realize that they're not only jeopardizing their knees and their hips and their shoulders, but they're also jeopardizing their mind later in life. They're going to lose their ability to think clearly or remember things, and those abilities really define who a person is. I mean, your brain function really defines you as a person, and I think if players realize that may lie ahead for them, there'll be every effort to try to reduce this type of trauma. So we're going to have to reduce the major hits, the egregious hits like we saw a week ago, and we're going to have to manage concussions much better because we think that a concussion that isn't resolved and a person goes back to play and has another hit, we think that may be very dangerous. And then somehow we're going to have to reduce the amount of just subconcussive hits, and that's maybe through changes in our practice regimens, I'm not sure. But we really have to have an overall reduction of brain trauma.
Michael Oriard, listening there in Corvallis, Oregon, I mean, this makes it sound, this is a much-loved game, and people like it for all kinds of reasons, but, you know, listening to this, if even subconcussive hits, sort of the regular thing that happens every time the ball is snapped at the line, if that's causing brain damage for life, I mean, is it possible we've just acclimated ourselves to an immoral game, Michael?
Well, you know, I could not agree with Dr. McKee's everything she said anymore. In fact, the reporting on her research and then the reporting on the research at North Carolina, Kevin Guskowitz on these subconcussive hits, mm-hmm. you know, is absolutely what has sort of shaped my view of these things. You know, as Dr. McKee says, yeah, you take out the big hits and then you have this other problem of the hit after hit after hit, as many as 1,000 in a season. I think her sort of mentioning briefly the idea of practices is important here. I mean, a hit is a hit, whether it happens in a game or in practice. You can, in fact, change behavior and practices much more easily than in games. But for me, I mean, the things that she said point to the, you know, enormous uncertainty about the future of football as a sport. And actually, I would ask her a question. Does she have any sense of how many years it's going to take to get enough data to really know how dangerous this game is for what percentage of football players, not just in the NFL, but, you know, at all levels?
Dr. McKee, is there still a question about that?
Well, certainly. There's a lot more work to be done. We know there's a problem. We really don't know a lot there's still a lot of unanswered questions. What we don't know is things like, is it important the age at which a person starts to play football? That said, is it more dangerous for a 13-year-old to experience these hits than for a 25-year-old? We think that the earlier in life that you experience these hits, the more detrimental they are. So we also don't know exactly how much of a hit, how frequently, what the interval between hits is that produces this change. There's so many things that we don't understand about the head trauma load, as so to speak. I think that we've dramatically accelerated our knowledge on this illness. In the last 2 years, we've gone from really 0 to 50. And if we continue on our course, in the next 2 or 3 years, I think we will have substantially more data about who is more likely to get this than not.
Kevin Blackstone, you're listening patiently there. We're talking here now about subconcussive hits, and maybe if we can take some of those out of practice. I mean, I haven't played since high school, but my number one memory of practice in high school was coaches shouting, hit, 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 hit. I mean, that was the point.
Right. It'll be very difficult to do, if not impossible. And if you don't teach kids at a young age how to play the game and how to hit, then I would think that would not serve them very well going on down the line. You know, at the end of the day, football, I think, appeals to so many of us because of the violence in the game. I love the game. There's no game I like more to watch than football. I just don't want to cringe anymore when I watch it. That's what I want to get away from. And I should say, following up on the doctor's point, you know, I also cringe when I see some of the guys who have played the game years later and what they're like. And I think that any player playing right now or any player that comes into the NFL right now should pay a visit to see the great John Mackey. Because here's a guy who was a father of the modern NFL union, who is now suffering tremendously from the effects of having played the game, dementia. And so for any guys who have a question about whether or not they can play this game and whether or not they can play this game with the restrictions that some people want to put place on them, they really need to pay a visit, pay homage to John Mackey, and they can get a better sense as to what they're being put through.
Joe Nash, you're a smart guy, and you came walking in here looking pretty darn mobile, and yet you're hearing the same thing we're hearing, even about subconcussive hits, and you were right there as a nose tackle in that line. I mean, is it possible that we've grown accustomed, more than accustomed to this game, but that we're somehow like, you know, Romans shouting at the Colosseum? Is it possible there's something immoral going on?
Well, I think that there are people that do look at the games and want to see those big devastating hits. But I think in general, I think people just love the action of the game, and it doesn't need to be those really violent hits. As far as the subconcussive hits, player that I played against quite a few times was Mike Webster, played for the Steelers, who passed away, and he's one of the brains that they're talking about. Mm-hmm. And I actually saw him after his 20th year. We played against each other in his 20th year, and at that point in time, he had already had issues. So
there it is. I mean, that's not the big hit. That's not egregious. And that's just hit.
But I think also, I think part of the equation in here is you look at what the NFL is going to be doing as far as, you know, the players not being able to go back out on the field until they're cleared by a neurologist.
Right.
I think you look at the changes in the helmet itself. The helmet has come a long way from when I first started playing, it was literally straps on an inside of a helmet with a piece of string holding it together, and that was it. So I think that there's been a lot of movement as far as the technology itself. Maybe they have to cut down the number of hits that, that take place in a practice. I think that, that may be the case. But I think as far as the game itself, I can't see the offensive and defensive line lining up in three-point stance against each other, two-point stance against each other.
Right. That would be a that would be rugby, or nearly. Dr. McGee, you say you're a fan. Can these things coexist then? The things that draw you as a fan to football and, just for starters, brain health over time?
Well, I think just the sheer athleticism of the sport. I mean, you know, it's always amazing what those guys can do, you know, catch one-handed on the fly. It's all it's an amazing sport to watch. It isn't just the hits that are exciting. It's the enormous display of elite athletes in a game that requires thinking and isn't just
But it's the tackle, the threat of the tackle. If you take that big hit away, it'll still be football for you?
I think the big hits can go away and it'll still be football for most people. I think those big hits are terrifying.
Well, we may all be getting a chance to find out right here in the middle of this season, a big sport and a big question with some big fines right in front of us just a week ago now. So grateful to all of you for being with us. Anne McKee with the Boston University School of Medicine, doing a lot of the leading edge research here. Anne, thank you very much for being with us today.
You're welcome. Michael
Oriard, formerly with the Kansas City Chiefs, with us today from Corvallis, Oregon, author of Bowled Over and Brand NFL. Michael, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Joe Nash, formerly of the Seattle Seahawks, with me right here in the studio. Thanks so much, Joe, for coming in. And Kevin Blackistone, it's always great to have your insight. Thanks for being with us, Kevin.
Thanks, Tom.
Kevin Blackistone at the AOL Fan House. Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.